It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Carm and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Del Carm.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
It took you a while, Brendan. You should be on the, not on your back, on your heels. You should be very much on the front foot. This is a big week. It's the URC final. And one I suspect that you've been looking forward to for a long time. It's a home ground or hometown final for you. So I can see that you're sort of bursting at the seams already.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I think we've been in this game long enough to know.
Meant to say frothing at the mouth.
I think we've been around long enough to know when these weeks come around, you have to enjoy them because they don't come around often. And especially when the teams you cover sort of make it to a final, it becomes a bit more enjoyable to have a week when you're working, whereas other guys are watching you work, for instance. Yeah. But it's been a busy week in Pretoria. We've had the Springboks there as well. So it's sort of been running between the two. Not the worst thing to do. I suppose you have to enjoy it when you're busy rather than not being busy.
It's almost like the rugby capital of the world this week, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, it could be worse. You could be sitting in Parma and not having to cover Zebre or, something like that, or, being somewhere where the season's long ended.
To be fair, I mean, at least Italy's got some representation in the final. Andrea Piardi, the man from Brescia, has been assigned to his second consecutive URC final. So there is an Italian influence in it.
Well, yeah, and I think let's start there. Maybe we should start with the refereeing.
Yeah, we start in reverse. How's that?
To get people to listen, because everyone's got an opinion about the referee. Andrea Piardi was exceptional, I thought, against the most of the game. I didn't see the whole game against Glasgow Munster. But he certainly is the type of referee who likes to make a decision and then stick by it. He's forthright. You might not always agree with his decisions, but he's certainly a referee that doesn't waver in his thing. So, and that's good for players because at least you know what you're dealing with. It. I think what we saw
doesn't
on Saturday,
take nonsense, basically, like people back chatting and telling him, allowing 15 different opinions.
He'll sort that out, right or wrong. He'll sort that out straight away. And I think what we saw on Saturday with Sam Grove-White was probably the opposite end of the scale, where there was way too much allowed, and it almost felt like. They didn't really want to make a decision. Somebody said to me, ironically, before the game, they were a bit worried. Quite a well-known rugby personality said to me they were quite worried about the referee because the Scottish referees don't like making decisions, don't like giving penalties. And I sort of laughed it off at the time, but after that game, it sort of stuck with me the whole time because there weren't anybody watched that game. There was a number of high tackles, there was a number of late hits, there were a number of incidents, and on both sides. I mean, you look at Jameson Gibson-Park, how he got taken out at the ruck there, I think it was by Aka Fanamava. In most other games, we would have seen a number of TMO replays on that, and it just seemed like the officials weren't really interested in it. And as much as we want to give the referee the blame, it is a situation where the match officials work as a team. And, we've got to realize that. And so he was also let down by his TMO and his ARs, the assistant referees. So, but I think Andrea Piardi is the right call for the final. He has been the most consistent. And as I say, I mean, rightly or wrongly, you're always going to know where you stand with him. And I think both teams will appreciate that.
Yeah, no, his star's very much on the rise. I mean, he's obviously recognized elsewhere as well. I mean, he's got a couple of Six Nations appointments. So, it's not as if he's the rookie that we saw a few years ago. He's now an established referee. And I think most people, when they see he's in charge, I mean, I think it does bring a degree of comfort. I agree with you. Last weekend, it was very much a match, whether you were a Leinster supporter, a Bull supporter, or if you were a neutral, I got the feeling in that game that just anything could happen next. And, you just don't know whether the officials would be on top of it. But, very happy with PR disappointment.
Yeah, no, I think looking at the two teams, I think we've got an incredibly, first of all, looking at the results, I think while both of them were unexpected in their own way, both teams played magnificent semifinals, did exactly what they needed to do to put the Irish teams out of the semi-final. And I suppose from an Irish point of view, and I know some people are going to get very upset if I say this, but they should be happy they were in the semi-final. Usually it's a quarter-final, isn't it? But anyway, we're going to get some hatred on that one.
Completely uncalled for. I mean, that's just, the ball isn't even out of the ruck.
I know. Maybe, okay,
in a weird way, it may yet work out for Ireland. I mean, they will have the, in terms of their national squad, the guys will have more time to rest, and maybe even their national coach will have more time to spend with with the players he'll assemble for the tour.
Yeah, I know it's going to be interesting. I'm sure they're all watching what's going to happen in the Wales Springbok game. But I know I'm going to probably get some flack about that. But why not? We're all having a bit of fun here. It's all a show, isn't it? Man? That's why we do these podcasts. It's not to be.
This is what they tell me. This is what they tell me.
Saying that, I mean, okay, look, I mean, both sides, the Bulls were absolutely magnificent on Saturday. I think let's stick to the rugby rather, because otherwise we might wander off in directions.
I don't think we need to dwell too much on the semifinals. I think if you just look at the final, not necessarily the one that a lot of people would have predicted, but if you look at, say, Glasgow season, where, you know, not too long ago they were top of the log in the URC, and then had a distinct wobble. I mean, they lost a couple of games in Africa and weren't convincing in Italy thereafter. They got the win, but it wasn't great. But they sort of picked themselves up again and, you know, they're in the final, and nobody can say they don't deserve that spot.
Yeah, I mean, they had their speed wobble at Ellis Park, and I mean, I think that's the one that really sort of took them out of their stride. The Bulls game, they came back, they had a bad sort of first half, Bulls got ahead. But they finished that game extremely strongly, within 6 points of the Bulls. And then I think the next week at Ellis Park was the one that really sort of bumped them off their stride. Yeah, against a 14-man Lions team. But saying that, I mean, they were exceptional at Thurman Park. I saw Franco Smith making a comment about apparently the Munster advertised the final.
Before the game. I actually saw that banner.
Which the picture has been widely distributed, which is a bit of a faux pas by somebody. And I'm sure somebody there got a good tongue lashing after that. But it certainly helped inspire Glasgow, and they were the better side on the day. I mean, it's hard to argue. Same with the Bulls. They were the better side against Leinster. And a lot of players put up their hands for their respective national teams.
Absolutely. We should also perhaps point out, you spoke about Glasgow's game against the Bulls, the one that they lost at Loftus, where they faced a distinct deficit at halftime and came back and played really well in the second half and got to within, 7 points, almost won that game. Their selections in that game, I know Franco Smith went with a lot of the guys who had niggles who started on the bench, but they happened to be some of these regular first-team players. So he also wanted to finish strong in that second half, sort of stay in touch at halftime, but they were just so far behind. I wonder if he's going to find what he'll have up his sleeve in terms of selection and tactics, because he always comes with a bit of a curveball.
Yeah, no, I expect that from Franco. He's a very astute coach. I've known him since he was a player. We both covered him when he was a player still at the Bulls at that stage and for the Springboks. And as a coach, he's always somebody who thinks outside the box. An incredibly serious, calculating type coach who will definitely have a plan for Loftus. And I think we know that. Mm. And Glasgow got nothing to lose. I think the biggest danger for Bulls is that they might have played their final a week early. And I know it's almost sacrilege in being in Pretoria and saying something like that, but we've seen it so often in sport. 2019 World Cup semi-final, England, you know, is smashing the All Blacks, and then the week later, you know, not being up for, well, you can say they weren't up from their point of view for the box, but the box smashed them back. So I think that's the biggest concern from a Bulls point of view. But other than that, you know, they're going to have altitude, the travel factors against Glasgow. You know, they've got 50,000 fans. It's almost sold out by the time we're recording this. So the, everything should point in their favor. It's just whether they can keep calm and composed and make the right decisions and not crack under the pressure.
We should probably also touch on the fact or try and get to the crux of where this game might be won or lost. There were a couple of really big performances in the semi-finals, but we don't, it's one of those things where you can't necessarily expect the same players to arise to the occasion 2 weeks in a row. But it's very difficult to see somebody like Cameron Arnakum not having another good one or having a big impact in the game. And on the Glasgow side, a guy like Sione Tupulotu, I mean, he was also fantastic last week.
Yeah, I think a lot depends on whether Willy La Rue's fit for the Bulls, if he's going to be all right. I thought him and Johan Huysen combined exceptionally well in that back line against Leinster. Just their tactical kicking was spot on. And you've got to give Jake White credit for the game plan him and his coaches came up with, because they caught Leinster a bit offside there. But yeah, you're right.
Sorry to interrupt you, but it's a few times now that Jake has sort of not outthought, but has come up with a plan that sort of fits the occasion against Leinster. I mean, think back to that semi-final win a few years ago.
Yeah, and again, the same sort of scenario. They didn't allow Leinster to do what they could do. And I think against a team like Leinster, you need to disrupt their momentum, their flow. They can't get any sort of momentum going in a game, because otherwise, as we saw in that second half, they can easily put up 22 phases and you won't be able to defend against that for 80 minutes. So the Bulls were incredibly disruptive and their pack was superb. So to me, I see that pack again being dominant. Especially the front row. I think the front row didn't get what the penalties they deserved out of that dominance on Saturday against Leinster. Again, the officials didn't seem to want to give any penalties. But I see them trying to make a statement as well, because, of course, you know what, there's also BOC coaches to impress, and there's a lot to do there. Glasgow's got a good maul. They're best in the business. They scored the most tries from the maul of any team. And they've got an incredibly good backline with Carl Steyn and some of those guys over there. I just think that's where it's going to be won or lost for the Bulls, is the backline, because without a Kurti Arendse, without a Kanan Moody, they're fine. But without a Willy La Rue, you see a very different Bulls backline as well.
I just get the sense with Glasgow that, okay, they've got fewer game breakers, you know, or standout players that you can point to and say, no, this guy's going to take the game by the scruff and then I can win it for them. I think it's more their strength is very much their collective. I mean, they are obviously very well coached. They know what they're about. They play to their strengths. And even in the sort of darker moments where they are on the back foot, they have found ways of scrambling very well, and where they, you know, where that sort of collective spirit kicks in, and the, you know, the one guy tackles for the next guy kind of vibe. So I don't think they're going to go away on Saturday. I think they're going to be very much in this contest, you know, towards the dying embers almost.
Yeah, I think it's also going to be a lot closer than a lot of people suspect. So prediction then?
Oh, that's. It's very tough to go against the Bulls at Loftus, given their run there. But I'm also one of those people who, when there's a potential, if you think as a punter, I mean, there could be quite decent value in this one. So I'm going to actually give it to the Warriors. I'm going to give it to the Warriors by a very slight margin.
I think it would be
only because the odds were likely to favour me. I haven't checked this morning, but the odds will probably get decent odds.
I think you would. I think it'd be sacrilege not to go for the Bulls in Pretoria.
Personal safety.
They're very good. No, not really. I've gone against them before in my life. I don't worry too much about that. But I do think they're going to probably have enough to win this. But it's going to be a close game. I don't think it's going to be an easy game for them. I don't think they're that dominant that you're going to see a 37-10 scoreline at some point, you know, 10 minutes into the second half again. I don't think it's going to be. It's going to be a lot closer than that. So Bulls win. But
I don't think, I doubt Glasgow will allow them to get away the way they did last time. So, it'll be closer.
Yeah, that's our URC. But we've obviously also got a Springbok test this week, and we thought we'd bring in a good guest to chat about it. And seeing as we don't know the Welsh side as well as he does, we had a chat to Simon Thomas, who's a Welsh rugby writer.
Few people do.
Yeah, and he gave us the lowdown of the Welsh squad, so have a listen. And ahead of the Welsh test for the Springboks, we've been focusing so much on the Springboks, so we thought, let's try and do a little bit about Wales, because, I mean, this is a side that we know some of the players through the URC, but, some of them are a couple of youngsters who haven't really been tested, and... Wales are coming off, what's it, 5 losses in a row. So a lot of expectation there for a new dawn. And with us, we've got prominent Welsh journalist Simon Thomas. Simon, how do I describe you now? Where are you now? We've known each other for 30-odd years, but, I mean, where are you working now? What are you doing now?
I think you described me as old, Bren. That's probably the best bet. I'm working freelance for the last couple of years. So I do a lot of work covering the URC, various different outlets, Rugby Pass, Rugby Paper here in the UK. So anyone who wants my scribbling services can get hold of me.
Yeah, I think we all are getting on a bit, but it doesn't make the Test Match Rugby any less exciting for us, Liam. I'm sure that's the case. Simon, just on that, Welsh team was announced today. Obviously, a lot of excitement ahead of the start of the international season. We still got one eye on the URC as well, yeah. Just maybe let's start with the URC then. I mean, it's been one of those seasons again for Wales where the Ospreys were probably the best side and raised a few eyebrows with some of their results, especially that one in Cape Town against the Stormers. But overall, a disappointing season for Welsh rugby.
Yeah, if you look at the Ospreys in all competitions this year, guys, they won 14 matches. Out of their 25. Now, that's more matches, more victories than the other three Welsh regions put together. They had 13, the Scarlets, Cardiff and the Dragons. That tells you a tale how they've been far and away the most competitive, the most effective Welsh team this season. And really, given the pretty sort of savage financial cuts we've had in Welsh rugby over the last year, the Ospreys have really punched above their weight. We've had reduced budgets, reduced squads. And Toby Booth, their coach, has really worked a minor miracle, really, to get them to 2 quarterfinals this season, into the Challenge Cup quarterfinal. And then, obviously, to get through to the last 8 in URC, where they actually gave Munster a pretty decent game for, certainly the first half. But it's been a very challenging season for Welsh rugby as a whole, both internationally and regionally. The first whitewash since 2003, it's been the Six Nations was a grim period, and there's a very, very challenging few weeks ahead with a strong Springboks team, then off to play the Wallabies down under. So, yeah, it doesn't get much easier, to be honest.
Simon, this may seem a silly question, but when Welsh rugby's been at its best, did you have one side dominating, or do you have to have a fair spread of competitiveness across your regions?
It's an interesting one because obviously, kind of 20 years ago, there was a pretty seismic change in Welsh rugby where we moved away from the old club structure. We had about 12 first top flight clubs, and then we moved to the regions, initially 5, and then after 1 year, we moved down to 4. Now, the idea of that was to concentrate your talent into a smaller number of sides, raise the level. And if you look at Wales's record overall in that period since 2003, it's been very successful in terms of the number of Grand Slams, in terms of quarterfinals and semifinals in the World Cup, twice going out to South Africa, unfortunately. So that has achieved success internationally, that reduction in teams and perhaps spreading the talent more evenly over the 4 sides. And but it hasn't really produced results at domestic level in terms of the Pro 14, Pro 12, URC, and in terms of Europe. I mean, Wales is yet still, after 28 years, as yet to have a Heineken Cup, Champions Cup winner. We've had a couple of successes with Cardiff and the Challenge Cup, but it is challenging. And it's, look, we talk about this all the time, don't we? And money isn't the only thing in sport, but it is the single most significant thing. And to an extent, that is felt more at club level than international level, because at international level, generally, players can play in different places. South Africa are a perfect example of that, aren't they, where they've got, you know, a lot of their talented players either in Europe or in Japan. So you're not sort of restricted so much financially. And Wales has that to an extent, but then we'll come on to that in a minute. But for this weekend, we only have our home-based players because the game is outside of the international window, which is another discussion altogether. Because it's outside the window, we only have the home-based players. And that does make taking on South Africa in those circumstances very challenging.
There's a bit of, obviously, a bit of expectation that maybe this might be the start of a new dawn. You know, we've certainly been through it in South Africa where we've seen, you know, Springbok teams at a low and us not doing well in Super Rugby at that stage. But the 15 or 23 players you put on the field for international tend to bond together a lot better at international level. So we've been through that. So we know how that pain feels. Are you a bit disappointed that Wales didn't pick your favourite Bulls player this week?
Cameron Hanekom. It was interesting because Warren Gatland was asked about him in today's press conference. And didn't give too much away, but did say, I think the phrase was, discussions with agents had taken place. And the implication from what Warren was saying was that he's come through the system there, he's highly thought of, very talented. So he's not someone that would be looking to commit to another country. And you can totally understand that. I mean, his performance last weekend against Leinster in the URC semi-final, I thought was one of the best performances I've seen by any player this season. And you really have to listen to people like Josh van der Vlier talking about Hanekom. How much they struggled to contain him. He is an absolute force of nature. Gatland said, you know, if it was possible, he's the kind of guy you'd love to have in your system. He is Welsh qualified, but let's be honest, he is such a talent that I would imagine he would be confident of getting into the Springbok system. I mean, he's, you know, I guess proud South African, grown up there, and that would be the path you'd expect him to take. But yeah, he would certainly be an addition to the Welsh squad, but you go where you want to go, don't you?
Yeah, if you're looking at a performance or asking for a performance from a young player and say, look, the box door is vaguely open. If you kick it down, you can get in. That was a performance where he just removed everything out of his way. It was an entirely compelling performance.
The one moment that really struck me, guys, was Leinster went through 21, 22 phases. I think it was about 7 minutes from time. And himself and Elric Lowe, primarily Hanekom, put in a kind of cut you in two tackle, which sent Caelan Doris, who's a fine player, sent him backwards. And not only that, but then completed the clear out and the counter ruck to win the ball. And it was really the decisive moment in the game. So it shows that he's not just a dynamic carry. Because if you look at the first try, which was off a scrum, he makes a break 20 metres and he is just so dynamic. It, you know, you can get hands on him, but he's so difficult to stop, and the ball then comes out to the wing of Seagull and it's the first try. And I think that one was actually disallowed, but it showed the actual athleticism and power of the guy. And he's still young, isn't he? So, yeah, I think he's got everything, to be honest, and good luck to him for the future.
I think from my point of view, I can also see him being in the Springbok squad. And I would even go as far as saying that he's laid a claim to start against Ireland, especially after their performance against Leinster. It's quite a good argument to have in terms of playing him against Ireland after he did that. But I think it's probably been a blessing in disguise that the Bulls got through to the final is that he didn't go to Wales this week, because I think if he was in that box squad and even in the 23 or even in the travelling squad, I think that would have probably overshadowed this test quite a bit, because I think all the questions would have probably been about him either way, whether he was there or whether if the Bulls weren't in the final and he was left out. I think there would have been a lot of questions around that. So in a way, it's been good, and hopefully next week he comes into the Springbok squad. I can't see how he'd stay out for too long. But yeah, he's definitely a great talent. Simon, I mean, what is the expectation in Wales about this test? I mean, it is outside the window. As you say, local players only. I see Jack Morgan's also out. You guys have some injuries there as well. Just what's the expectation from this?
Very, very low, to be honest with you. Before I came on, guys, I made a little note of the players who are unavailable for this game for one reason or another. You touched on Jack Morgan, but you add to that probably the four first-choice second rows: Will Rowlands, Adam Beard, Dav Jenkins and Teddy Williams. Tommy Reffel, who was probably Wales' standout player in a difficult Six Nations, he's unavailable because he plays for Leicester in England. English-based players unavailable. Tarupa Faletau, who was all lined up to go on this tour, then in his comeback, he gets another arm injury. Thomas Williams, who's been the best scrum half in Wales for the last year or so, probably in most people's eyes. Josh Adams, Lions winger, unavailable. Ryan Elias, hooker. Dylan Lewis, another one. So it's, and then you add into that the likes of George North, who's just recently retired, and Lewis Rees-Sammet, who's now playing another sport in the NFL. And also the one who I've always really rated, Gareth Anscombe, who you'll know about from Super Rugby days, and has just signed to join Gloucester for next season. So he's back available for Wales from next season. But because he hasn't played for a while, he's taken the summer basically to focus on getting fully fit. So you're talking almost an entire first-choice team absent. So it's a big, big challenge. But as Gatland said today, it does mean that opportunity knocks for some youngsters. And there are some exciting youngsters in there. I mean, for South African fans who haven't seen so much of him, Cameron Winnett, the fullback, remarkable story, really. Before this season, he'd only played two or three games for Cardiff, and he ends up starting every game in the Six Nations. And it was as if he'd been there for years. You know, nothing seems to faze him. He's a really classy, graceful runner. So I think people will enjoy watching him play if he gets some opportunity. And then at the other end of the scale, Liam Williams is back in the back three after his time away in Japan. So he'll bring some welcome experience. Rio Dyer on the other wing at a decent Six Nations. So there's attacking talent there. And I guess one of the players that there's a lot of debate on in Wales is Mason Grady, who's probably over the last year been the most dangerous player with ball in hand, certainly in the first half of last season, and has kind of fluctuated between centre, outside centre and wing. But this weekend he plays at 12, so I guess he goes up against Andrew Oosthuizen. And that will be a real physical meeting, because Mason is in the old Jamie Roberts, George North, big, big physical centre, back in the quarter. He's got pace as well, the ability to play on the wing. I suppose the thing is that it changed again then during the Six Nations, and a large chunk of the team that became the side during the World Cup and during the Six Nations are now unavailable. I mean, Jack Morgan was so good in the World Cup, and then Tommy Reffel comes in and as a great Six Nations, because seven has generally always been quite a productive position for Wales. You think of Sam Warburton, Justin Tipperick. We've had good players in that position. And well blessed again with both Jack Morgan and Tommy Reffel. Now, they're both unavailable for this weekend. So that creates an opportunity for a guy with a very famous sporting surname in James Botham, the grandson of Sir Ian Botham, the England cricketer, who actually started the first game in the Six Nations against Scotland, but then got injured in the process of scoring a try and was out for quite a while. Wasn't actually in the original squad, but because of the situation, Jack Morgan, he was called in yesterday, and now he's straight into the starting lineup. James, a very versatile player, can play right across the back row. Very physical guy, good over the ball, strong carrier, strong in defence. So he won't let Wales down at all. But they have had to make a lot of changes from what you would see as being the first choice team. I think that's the criteria, really. How far away is this from what Gatland's first choice Wales team would be? And there's quite a lot. Second row in particular, I mean, you know, Matty Screech has got one cap, hasn't been involved with Wales since 2020, 3 years ago. He's there. Ben Carter, still quite a young guy in the second row. That's that position in particular is where Wales have lost, as I said, Dav Jenkins, Will Rowlands, Adam Beard, Teddy Rowlands, Chris Chunza, who would all potentially be further up the pecking order than the guys who are starting. So it's a big, big test for them. Yeah, so I was talking, you know, James Botham, who's coming in at seven, you know, and let's say very versatile players. But, and so the back row, if you look at it with Wainwright, who I think Aaron Wainwright's probably been arguably the player of the season in Wales overall. He's been very good at club and international level, played a lot of rugby, good athlete, very dynamic, good line out forward. He's been excellent. And Tane Plumtree was an interesting one coming in, you know, the son of John Plumtree, the Sharks coach. So I think he's like, you know, a very athletic guy. But, the back row, not, you know, I think it's a decent back row. As I say, the area that's been hit really hard is the second row, because you've lost, as I say, Adam Beard, Dav Jenkins, you've lost Will Rowlands, Teddy Williams, Chunza, all who probably would be further up the pecking order than the two guys who were starting. And when you look at the second row, I mean, you've got Estebez. I mean, there was one stat I saw today. Eben Estebez has got 119 caps, I think it is, for South Africa. The entire Wales pack that starts has got 118. So that's the contrast we're dealing with, really. Europe, I mean, and I look at scrum half as well. I followed the progress of Ellis Bevan with a lot of interest this season, playing at Cardiff. Nice lad, really sort of really good attitude, very professional, determined to make the absolute best of himself. Interesting backstory. He was born in the Midlands, grew up in England, but his dad's from Swansea, and he always grew up knowing he was very much of a Welsh heritage and Welsh roots and always wanted to play for Wales. Came to study in Cardiff to sort of give himself a better opportunity. Got a contract in Cardiff. Thomas Williams got injured. Ellis steps in this season, done really well. Comes in now. What a game for him. First cap, first test. Who's he up against? Faf de Klerk. You know, it's some initiation, but that's your opportunity you get sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, some players get 40 tests to prove themselves. Others get one. So, I mean, that's the nature of the game. And I think, I suppose, just from that point of view, that's a hell of an opportunity, because if nobody's expecting, with all the injuries, Wales to do too much, you could only win out of that situation. So if you hold the Springboks, it'll cause them some problems.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's what would be an acceptable result. You often get something like that. I mean, last summer, Wales had a very tough time against South Africa in Cardiff ahead of the World Cup, and that was a real kind of wake-up call. And I think Wales stepped up again then at the World Cup, having played in that game. And I think this, again, will be a bit of a reality check. But obviously, Wales are coming from a much lower position, having had a very difficult Six Nations. So, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one because Wales are actually the away team. I mean, this is designated as a home South Africa match. I think it's very much, it's part of obviously a double header with the Barbarians playing Fiji the same day. But I think there's the big focus on probably expat South African supporters in London coming to the game. Not sure quite how many Welsh fans will be travelling to Twickenham. So yeah, I think it'll be a very, very testing weekend. It's one of those, guys, if three or four of the younger players emerge with credit and look as though they're people who can live and survive on the stage, or those kind of class players, then you probably take that as more important in some ways than whatever the result is. Because it is very much with this year. It's a transitional period, very much.
Well, look, there's lots of food for thought, Simon. Thanks for your time, man. Jeez, I think we could probably talk for an hour about this. But I suppose we're all going to sit there watching on Saturday. I must admit, I'll have one eye on the Bulls. I'll be at Loftus, so it's going to take some of my attention away.
All the best to you guys, and enjoy the weekend.
Will do. Thanks, Matt. Cheers.
Of course, he wasn't our only guest. You were able to get a word somewhere else as well, Rinder?
Yeah, we got Apelele Fassi, who came in. He's obviously one of the guys. We'll all be watching what's happening with the Springboks. Edwolf and Amava, getting his debut. Jordan Hendricks as well, which is an interesting one, especially in the same day that Sanele Nahamba won URC Player of the Year. But Jordan's defensive stats probably gave him the nod over Sia Masuku. And he's going to be eagerly watched. But Apelele Fassi is almost on a redemption tour because he was in the box squad, was seen as the next big, then dropped out.
Yeah, just quickly on the Hendricks thing, he is certainly a player that involves himself. I thought he was excellent the last almost month of the URC. He certainly gets stuck in. And if you think back to the analogy that, or not analogy, but the explanation Rassi gave when he was asked about Hachiva Diamani and, you know, why he may not necessarily feature in a box squad, he referred to players who get involved in different scraps on different parts of the field. Their sheer willingness to get involved, roll the sleeves up and get stuck in. And you certainly get that with Jordan Hendricks as well.
Yeah, no, you certainly do. So we had a chat to Apelele Fassi. He told us about his hopes in the Springbok jersey and, as I say, his redemption tour. So, yeah, have a listen. And on that note, we'll probably go out with that one. Say goodbye, and then we'll be back next week with a full countdown of both the Bulls win in the URC final. Oops, maybe I'm being a bit too confident there.
Oops.
And hopefully a Springbok win.
Yeah, it's a bumper weekend, so please enjoy it. We'll catch you next week.
Your last test was in
Bloemfontein.
Did you get a sense after that at any point that, geez, I mean, this is the train has moved on? I mean, did you feel despondent at all that it might never happen again?
Not necessarily. You know, I think when obviously reality hit with me going back to my club level, yeah, I just knew that there's certain things I have to work on, and obviously I was told, and I just went back to my club and spoke to my coaches, and decided that the things that I've been told are the things that I need to work on, and also focus on not just only my weaknesses but also my strengths as well.
So, what's the differences between Weekend Special 2022 and Weekend Special 2023?
I would say confidence, and also a good thing is that, you know, being able to finish a campaign without any like injuries, that's the biggest thing, I think. Obviously playing two games, three games in a row, five games, you kind of build a bit of confidence in yourself. And, I think obviously in the past is playing five games, getting injured out for 3 months, coming back, playing two games, getting injured for another 3 months, you know, there's no consistency in your game and everything. So I think just probably this year, and it's just being able to be consistent and stay injury free.
You played those three tests all on the left wing, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
What is your expectations now? Have you been briefed about what is expected of you this time or no?
Nah, not at all. But like I said, like I always say, that in any team that I am, I'm just here to help. If they put me lock or anything, I'll be there to play. So yeah.
Tell us about the influence of Tony Brown and Jerry Flannery so far. I mean, what's different? What have you picked up that's sort of move the needle a bit for the box in terms of the input?
I think Jerry's a world-class coach, you know, very passionate guy through his defense, you know, obviously a few tweaks on defense, but nothing much has changed. I think Tony is obviously a brilliant guy. Spent most of his time here in South Africa playing for the South African team. I think he truly understands how South African rugby is. And, and hopefully we can see a few things that they're working on towards us as well.
You're a player with a vast skill set and a box of tricks. What gives you the biggest thrill when something comes off?
I'm a very passionate guy, so if we, during the week, plan something and then it comes off, you know, obviously you totally show emotion onto it. And then, yeah, just show emotion and then probably look forward onto the next one.
Yeah. So it's more something that has been planned that works instead of something that happened on impulse in the game.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.